Everyone.
Lorette's given me one of her wonderful descriptions of what I need to talk about today, which I've completely ignored. So I've given myself this title. And what I thought I'd do is, I've got one chart, but rather than, we've had enough charts from Didier to last me an entire lifetime, and I'm still digesting most of them, but I was frantically scribbling things down that I need to remember. Thank you. What instead I thought I'd try to do today is raise some issues that I think are important to consider in terms of the challenges that lay ahead, the challenges that face us in terms of tackling obesity, and the ways in which we might want to work and work together to do that. Here's my chart. The most important thing for me as a numbers geek about this chart is that there is a big difference, in most cases, between the measured data and the self-reported data. So most people use this chart just to show huge difference in prevalence between countries, but what we see is that the way you collect the data also seems to have an effect on that, and that's, I think, a common theme in the work we're doing in the observatory, is not just to accept what is put in front of us, but to ask where those data come from, what's the provenance, and what does this really tell us. This this sign was in the window of a shop near where I live. They've not just made the sugar cheap, they've reduced it to clear, so goodness knows what they're going to replace it with. And of course, food wars have even come to Montreal. I mean, this was on the BBC website not long ago about the bagel war here. So something is really resulting in bagels being a source of conflict within the city. I must apologize that the BBC seemed to think that Montreal is in America. So the formatting's gone wrong, but I tried to make amends for my Canadian friends. And I paid a homage to one of these two places in the bagel war, Fairmount Bagel, highly recommended, delicious wood-fired bagels, wonderful place, very friendly people. And they're quite small, they're not massive ones, so you can eat one or two without feeling too bad about it. One of the other things that I'm very intrigued by and concerned about is unintended consequences and the nature of barriers. So I don't know how, it's not very clear actually, but this chart shows the size of the bars is a measure of the risk of death, the pedestrian fatalities per 100,000 within a range of different cities. So you've got Atlanta up here with 11, Los Angeles over here with about 8. I don't think we've got anywhere in Canada. Sorry, it's an American chart. But you get down to here with Amsterdam with 3 and Stockholm over here with 1.2. And, of course, one way of interpreting this is to say, don't make people walk in Atlanta because it's a dangerous and unpleasant activity. My response would be, what do we do to make Atlanta a place that is safe and pleasant to walk in? The real message here seems to me, don't just assume that one size fits all. We need to tailor our interventions to local audiences and local circumstances. Otherwise, we'll find ourselves... this is a real place in Norway. I was there this summer. It's a lovely place. Delicious pizza. I've actually got a picture of the road to hell, which I can assure you is not paved with good intentions. But of course... if we want to avoid that, we can cycle in the opposite direction on a very nice Montreal city bike, following a very nice Montreal cycle lane. But where does that take us? And it takes us, it seems to me, to a world with increasing complexity. So here's a timeline of complexity, and this could easily be a timeline of complexity relevant to obesity. Actually, it's the number of crayons available in the Crayola crayon range, which has gone up from 8 in 1903 to 120 in the present day. But much as we've seen ourselves paralyzed with choice in terms of food, we see the same in the crayon world. So, it was easy for a five-year-old in 1903 to make a choice about his or her crayon. Now, just imagine the psychological trauma behind it. At the same time as this complexity, we're seeing an extraordinary profusion of marketing approaches of different brands. This is some work from the States where these guys just went to, I don't know, 85, 100 stores and just looked at all the different soft drinks available in those stores and who had actually made them. And 89% of the drinks actually came from three companies, Coca-Cola, Dr. Pepper Group, and PepsiCo. But the profusion of brands was just extraordinary. So there's a cacophony, there's a noise, there's a complex mess of stuff out there that consumers are having to navigate, and it's difficult. And at the same time, of course, we're seeing new markets emerge. This is a piece in Advertising Age about overweight and obese people being a new market that's ripe for advertising activity. So what do? Do we just dangle there, the floor taken away from us, wonder what to do? Well, I was thinking about, I've actually got the book of this. It's called Powers of Ten. It was made as a short film in 1968 by Ray and Charles Eames. And it starts out in space and it zooms in by roughly, they got a few things wrong, but roughly a factor of 10 each time. So in the human scale, you can look down on a park with a picnic rug, you can look a bit more closely, you can, and we can do this in the way we study the problem. We can start at a macro level, and we can zoom down, and we can get to a more and more micro level. And in terms of conceptualizing the challenges that we're looking at, it seems to me we need to do all these things at the same time. There's no point only thinking about the genetic aspects of obesity if we ignore the influence of the wider environment on food choice. So, but we need both of them. We need all these things. So we can zoom down in, but we also then need to come back out again and take the big picture. And this, it seems to me, is at the heart of an effective systems approach to conceptualizing and working on the problem. We also, I think, need to look away from the obvious and let our eyes rest on things that may perhaps not be so obvious, maybe in the background. I don't know if it shows up on here, but there are actually some bushes in the background there, but you need to sort of half go to sleep to see them. But my point is that much of the detail is actually rather fuzzy and it's lost in the background when we're trying to research these problems, trying to understand what's going on. But sometimes it's the detail that gives the game away. I don't know if you would realize, if you couldn't see the little bit down at the bottom right, that these are airport trolleys. But without that little clue, it seems to me unlikely that you would. So sometimes we need to be able to pick up on these little details to find out what's going on in the rest of the picture. Sometimes we need to look for... I think I'm going to invent a new field called visual epidemiology, because I'm no good at numbers, but I can do this kind of epidemiology and look at patterns, look at the way the light falls on things. And we can spot patterns. We can try to understand what's going on, but we don't clearly only want to understand. We want to act. We need to think how we're going to deal with these things, both at a relatively human individual scale, like this sort of apartment block, or at a bigger scale as we move out and take a bigger perspective. It's also, I think, really important not to forget the people who are on the edge, the elderly, the poor, the dispossessed, and think about the distributional impacts of all the things that we're looking at here. We sometimes need to start in the middle and only then realize that we've missed the beginning. And work our way around a problem. And this is something that I think we were discussing, a group of us was discussing a research project yesterday, and we'd started looking at it from one perspective, but actually it turned out we needed to go further back up the chain, further back up the ladder, and think about it in a different way. There's a big problem with evidence in terms of obesity. One of the jobs of my organization is to translate raw data and raw evidence into meaningful messages for policymakers. But these are floodlights on a sports pitch in the snow. And as you can see, only part of what is there is illuminated. And it seems to me this is a very helpful metaphor for understanding what's going on in the field that I work in. Most of what we want to understand is up there in the bit at the top. We don't have a light to shine on it, and we need to work out how we're going to do that. One of the lights that we can shine on things is scrutiny, is data, is getting things out in the open. There's a guy called David McCandless who's really been pushing this in England. He's done a very good TED talk, which I recommend, where I nicked this from. This is actually a chart about the financial crisis, and there's a huge blob down the bottom of this chart that shows the global deficit, but if I put that on, you wouldn't see anything else. And the point of his work, really, is just to say, well, let's not talk about these numbers in isolation. Let's not just have someone arguing about the cost of the war and someone else arguing about the cost of obesity, which is down here, or someone else arguing about the defense budget or whatever. Let's put it all in the same place so you can compare and you can see where things fit together. And the other important principle, I think, is that this is done in a very democratic and transparent way. The source data for that chart is available in a Google document. I just logged on this morning, and I could find it, and it tells you the provenance of the figure on obesity-related disease treatments. It's from the CDC, quoted in a Wall Street Journal article. So this is very, very public. It's very transparent, and I think it is allowing us to see things in a way that we might not otherwise have seen them. We're working on some tools in my organization to give data to people at local level. Here's a map of obesity and its various determinants. You can, I don't know if you see that drop down, but you can select various things about levels of physical activity or amount of green space. You can change your map. This one reflects proportion of green space in the local authority area. And you can zoom in and find out what's going on locally. And it seems to me that information is an absolutely key tool here. We've just heard about action at local and regional and provincial level, and putting information, meaningful information, in the hands of people who have to act at all of those levels is a vital tool. One of the other aspects of this, it seems to me, is to challenge the received wisdom. Now, I haven't read this book yet. It's only just come out. But it's written by a guy who certainly was, if not still is, a vegan who doesn't believe in eating meat. But he's challenged all the received wisdom about the inefficiencies of meat, the cost of farming meat, and whether or not meat is workable in a sustainable world. Now, his conclusion is that meat produced the way we do produce it is not. But there are other marginal sources of food for animals. There's waste products. There's land that couldn't be cultivated in any other way, and so on, that could be used. And if we do that rather than growing grain to feed cattle, we could actually be generating meat in a much more sustainable way. Now, clearly, that has specific implications for diet and obesity. But the fundamental point for me was that this chap was challenging the figures. He was not accepting what everyone had said, and he was going back and doing the calculations himself. It's very much the same as the billion-dollar-a-gram approach. But as ever, I find myself coming back to the Foresight Obesity System map. Now, this map is imperfect, it is flawed, it is incomplete, it confuses people. But as a principle, it seems to me, this is still at the heart of the way I work in obesity, and it seems to me it still needs to be, maybe not this map, but an iteration of it, needs to be at the heart of our understanding and our approaches to understand and our approaches to tackle the problem. Because if we only focus on specific areas or even individual nodes within this map, we will fail to solve the problem. So we've got a lot of things to juggle. Is Lorette gone? Ah, she must have been... the Lorette slide is just coming up. There's a place called Skagen. Anyone Danish here? A place called Skagen in northern Denmark. It's the very tip, very northernmost tip of Denmark. Wonderful place, and it's where the North Sea, the Skagerrak from the North Sea, and the, what's it called, the Kattegat from the Baltic meet. And, you know, it's not as impressive as Cape Horn, but these two seas meet, and I never dare use a video in PowerPoint, but I took a video of this, and these waves are coming together, and they're clashing, and they're clashing, and they're clashing. And I stood there for half an hour just watching this, mesmerized. And I think this is a really helpful metaphor for the kind of stuff that we need to do as a group. Where, you know, some of us are coming from the North Sea, some of us are coming from the Baltic, others are approaching from the sand. We've all got to meet together somehow, and there will be clashes. We generate waves, but within that process, there is a wonderful energy. There is a mesmerizing energy that, it seems to me, can drive this work forward and keep this kind of thing going and build on it. And I'm really sorry that Lorette isn't here to see this photograph of her. I didn't realize, I don't know if any of you realize what a wonderful tightrope walker she is, but she does walk this tightrope, trying to lead us on this route. And I'll have to show her later. And if we do that, it seems to me, we can end up able to play three recorders at the same time. An extraordinary feat. The only thing better, this was a wonderful circus I went to recently, the only thing better than this was when he managed to play two more, one out of each nostril, but I was laughing so much I couldn't take a photograph of that. But for me, that's the aim of my trip over to McGill for this meeting, is to leave at the end of a couple of days feeling that I've got one more recorder in my mouth, and that from all the stuff I'm learning, I'll have a better way to get on and do my job. Thank you.
Patrick Webb.